This is the Scale Up podcast, where we sit down with South Africa's top entrepreneurs to uncover what it really takes to scale a lasting business. In every episode, I am joined by Nicholas Teeter, our in-house scaling expert. Nicholas has 20 years of experience in the entrepreneurial space. He has worn several hats from founder to CEO, COO, you name it. He has helped scale 4 companies from early stage to serious growth. And today he works with ambitious leadership teams to help them navigate the scaling journey. In today's episode, we are joined by Kim Whitaker, entrepreneur, strategist, and leadership coach. In 2013, Kim founded the award-winning Once in Cape Town, pioneering South Africa's hybrid youth hotel model. She walked the full founder journey from startup to scale and discovered that real growth doesn't come from systems alone. It comes from people. Today, she helps founders build cultures where performance and purpose go hand in hand. This is where the growth gets real. Let's dive in.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm excited.
So I'm sitting opposite you and Nicholas in studio today. I just really want to tell you that he was so excited when we got the confirmation of you attending our podcast recording. So Nick, why are you so excited about having Kim in studio today?
You know what? That's plain and simple. The longer I work with scaling companies and entrepreneurs and leadership teams, the more obvious it becomes that people and culture is the most important topic on making a company successful in the scaling process. And Kim, I know her for 8 years now here in Cape Town, and she's been both passionate and experienced in this topic, leading entrepreneurs and leadership teams on their cultural and people journeys. Glad to have you here as an expert on the topic.
Kim, you're helping shape cultures in both startups and scale up. What initially drew you to this space?
So when I had my own business, once in Cape Town and once in Joburg, and a nonprofit as well called Kwela Women, what I realized was the enduring sort of golden thread was our culture. Without knowing it, over years, we'd been building it and building the foundations. I exited my business. My team from Once and Puella would continue to reach out to me and say, I just want to let you know this is where I am at. And I just want to let you know that that time, you know, was really the foundation or the stepping stone of my career. And seeing people grow through business and through enabling cultures was something that made me extremely proud. And it also made me sleep better at night. And so after exiting my own business, I started consulting in various different organizations. And I realized that's something that I'm passionate about building and helping founders build in their own organizations.
But let's quickly just pause and start at the core. What is company culture to you? And if you had the time now to define it to our listeners, what is it actually?
The way I like to think about organizational culture is the same way I think about human culture. So Nick and I were chatting just before the podcast that we sometimes think in German. I have a German mum. He's grew up in Germany. And part of our culture is being German. So we think a certain way. We might react a certain way. Our behavior shows up in certain ways that is sometimes just very German. Right. And I like to think of organizational culture in a similar way. It's the way we express ourselves. It's the way that we think and behave as a collective. It's the way that we filter out new employees. We filter out stakeholders and customers. And it also determines who we invite in. A mentor and good friend of mine, Devorah Stein, says culture is how employees feel about going to work on a Monday morning. And that for me is, well, sums it up really well, right? Like, is it a culture of growth? Is it a culture of kindness? Is it a culture of ambition? This is really what culture means to me.
Now, coming to you, Nick, you work with several scaling companies. And does this culture that Kim described feature in your workings with your clients and also her explanation? Does this resonate with you and your experience with scaling companies?
You know, it's such an interesting topic. Like, I've been an entrepreneur across 5 companies. And when I started out, I was certainly very eager on results and the tangible things and getting my product shipped. And everything else was more important than culture. I really didn't know what to get my hands around there. And even now, when I work with companies and leaders and also leadership teams, the word culture seems fluffy and hard to grasp, like what you're saying. Like, it's what you feel when you enter in the morning. Sometimes I could have confused it with atmosphere and with looking forward to. But culture also has a very direct and very tangible thing. It's not a poster on the wall or a mission statement that's on the wall. It's actually what matters in a company, what gets people energized, where you hire against, where you can like reward and evaluate against, and where you have to fire against. And on that word firing, everybody is like suddenly like listening up and say, what does that mean? That sounds harsh. And what does it have to do with culture? Because culture seems to be like an atmospherical thing. But it's actually not. What culture is, the behavioral norms you set in an organization, how you do things and how you don't do things. It gives you guardrails out there in the ideal way, where you'd sort of define values on the company and saying, that's how we do things and how we don't things. And then you can come back to it. And when somebody adheres to it, you praise them. When somebody transgresses it, you discuss it. And when somebody completely long-term doesn't fit in, you let him or her go because he's better off somewhere else. And that heart definition of culture is also very, very important, because that's when it comes to scaling companies. If you don't have a culture that gives you guardrails, you'll have to micromanage along the way. And you can survive micromanagement until 20 people, maybe 30 people, but not 50 and not 100 and not 200 people. You will absolutely ruin your company if you're not managing to set a culture that's giving everybody playing field and the boundaries, what is acceptable and what's not acceptable in our company.
And you know, just to tie in, as you were talking now about firing or you know, what is acceptable and the guardrails, I don't know if you have the same thing, but whenever I travel to a new country, let's say somewhere in the Middle East or South America or somewhere where the culture is very different to my own, I always research before, like, what is culturally appropriate? And exactly. I'm culturally aware of what is acceptable and what is insulting. And so if we think about that in the same way, if we think about organizations in the same way, like, are we clear on what is acceptable, what is encouraged, etc.? Right. Are we clear about enabling people with that information before they join our teams, and, you know, as they're researching, you know, is this a place where I'd love to work? Are we clear about that so that people can determine, yes, this sounds really appealing to me, or no, this is just a culture that's not going to work for me?
How do we go about intentionally building a culture? Is there anything you usually tell CEOs when you start working with them, Kim? What they can do, what they should do, and also who should be driving it? Is it the CEO or is it the whole management team?
I found that the entry point for expanding culture, it took me a while to explain it in founder speak, to even make sense of it myself. And the way that made the most sense to me was to think about brand and culture as two sides of the same coin. So if I had to say to a founder, all right, you've got your product. Have you found product market fit? Have you got your website? Have you got your external marketing? Now imagine launching a product with no brand. That exists. There are companies out there who make millions of dollars with just a Gmail address. I realize that many companies don't need a website or external brand, but many companies do. And that is what they put out to the world. Now, if they have got an external facing brand, what is the internal version of that? For me, it's culture, right? So our brand is defined by the brand values, the brand's vision and mission. And maybe it's not clearly articulated yet, but it definitely exists, because when you're putting together a slide deck or an investor pitch deck or an Instagram page, whether it's clear to you or not, you have brand values, a vision, a mission, a purpose, etc. Defining that clearly externally is important for customers and product market fit. And defining it internally for culture is equally important to attract the right team to execute on this exciting mission. As Nick said earlier, starting to build all the systems, all the enabling processes, for example, a clarity around roles, clarity around KPIs, all based on those core fundamentals, right? Are we working towards the same vision? Are we on board with the same mission? Do we align on the values, and how exactly do those express themselves?
Nick, when it comes to scaling companies, do you think scaling companies emphasize enough how important company culture is?
Most companies talk about culture, but they treat it like a side dish and not the main course. And it's so obvious that most entrepreneurs and their leadership teams obsess about the next founding round and getting the product shipped. And they're spending days and months on selecting the next CRM because it sort of cries for urgency. But they're hesitant of spending even an hour on aligning the team on what really matters and what direction are we doing and how are we treating each other in this year. So like culture is talked about but not acted upon enough. And whenever I've seen companies succeed or fail, most failing companies didn't fail because of a dysfunctional product. But if you're scaling heavily and your culture is not in order, that will bring your company down. But let me explain a bit more, because the fluffiness of the word culture is still so difficult to get also from what you sense. It's so important to define it. But two examples out of my life, right? Before I became an entrepreneur, I was a management consultant at the Boston Consulting Group. It's one of the leading consultancies of the world. And they are leading because they got culture right. You are not a leading world global company if you don't get culture right. And they had a couple of values, and we had a couple of values. And one of it, for example, was we going the extra mile. What does that mean? If you're a top consulting, if you're a top service firm, doesn't have to be consulting, and your founder says, like, I'm commanding extra premiums here. I'm doing the best service ever. And whatever the client wants, we are going the extra mile. That is a very clear position. And it's absolutely clear for the founder. Was absolutely clear for every one of us working in there that is expected. If you're a person who doesn't do that, who just do your work and you go out and go home at 5 or 6 and so on, you're not going the extra mile. You will never excel in that company. You will never give the brand image that company needs to your customers. And that's a very clear value. And it's not a value in the sense of fluffiness. It's a value in the sense of, I'm the founder of this company. We are the leadership team. We just won't tolerate anything else. This is us. This is our DNA. And we have to go that way because we cannot have a fluffy positioning out there. If you're the founder and you're working in your company as a certain style, like that's how we do things, by codifying the values, I can say, but we had agreed that. And why didn't you do it? And that kept me up at night. I knew I can't live with this transgression, but I also didn't have the right to call out on it repetitively because I hadn't made it clear.
And so what's interesting about shared values is that what we often don't talk about enough is unshared values. And especially in a culture like South Africa, where we have 11 official languages, many different, you know, backgrounds, we have a melting pot of European, African, like, you know, it's so diverse that we cannot, it is not homogenous. It's the farthest away from homogenous ever. And so starting a business in South Africa is so very different from, for example, Germany, where you might walk into an office and almost everyone, maybe not today, but certainly 10 years ago, was very similar minded, very similar education level, etc. I'll give you an example, and it's so small, but I thought this is a very tangible insight. So I was working with a client who was looking for a way to celebrate their team. And so they decided, all right, as a celebration, like the team's done really well, they've reached all their targets and everyone's like really enjoying themselves. They organized like custom-made cupcakes, like beautiful handmade cupcakes that must have taken hours. And when I saw them, I was like, wow, this is so special, you know? And they delivered it to the team and there was this like, oh yay, and taking pictures. And then someone came around to the back and said to the manager, next time, you know, maybe would you consider kind of getting meat? And the manager was so upset. And he just said, you know, I put so much effort into this. How can there's no appreciation? And you've just gone beyond. And I said, okay, let's be curious about this. Let's interview this. Let's like get curious about why this is. So I asked a bunch of different people who'd grown up in a similar context. And they said, When we get married, we have meat. When there's a funeral, there's meat. If there's a graduation, we have meat. And so meat is how we celebrate.
Wow.
And
interesting.
I was like, this is fascinating.
The topic from people and culture eat strategy for breakfast and execution for lunch and cash for dinner, right? It's like literally it all boils down to having great people in the room.
Yeah.
And it's supposedly so difficult, yet it's so important. Because imagine it would be your company and you can choose to have the best people around that you can actually afford for this company. Why would you ever settle for less?
I think the exercise in the Scaling Up book that helps me the most is sitting with teams and saying, all right, we're going to dissect your team into A, B, and C team players. The A team players are aligned with values and they are performing, right? The B team are aligned with the values, but they're not performing. And the C team are neither performing nor aligned with the values.
This is a game changer. Absolutely. We have companies after having worked a year together, it gets clear to them how important that topic is.
Yeah.
And I think that's where...
And the other thing is, once the names are on the wall, in my experience, within 3 to 6 months, they're gone.
Changing or gone. For example, with value misaligned people, it's almost impossible to move, right? Values are values. They're deeply ingrained. Very rarely can you move them. But if somebody is fully on values, like loving your brand, loving your target group, and they're not performing, you have a high chance of moving them up.
Moving a B team player who is aligned on values, but perhaps is not performing strong, that can be done. Do you believe it's possible to take someone who's not aligned with the values and not performing and convert them into an A team player?
I think that's a good question. No, not aligned on values and not performing is a clear no. You shouldn't even waste time on it. What's an interestingly tough decision is somebody not aligned on values but performing.
Mm.
Right? Those are dangerous ones because you actually are very afraid of losing the energy. Maybe there's a star performer, but they're completely selfish and not playing in the team. Like, would you eliminate a Messi from a soccer team if he's absolutely selfish and can't play with the others? You have to eventually. But that's a really tough decision. So that's what we call C players. And understanding that and checking it and giving chances. But really, if you come to the conclusion that that person is absolutely not value aligned, for example, selfish, not thinking for the team, which is quite often for individual contributors, people who are really great at what they're doing, but they're not team players, they're not leaders, at least don't make them a leader, right? Don't make them a team leader because they cannot play in a team. And what will they do? They will hire others that are either equal or worse to them. Nobody hires somebody better than them, even... And that's creating a huge problem in that pocket where they are sitting.
Great observation.
Yeah. Thank you so much for joining us in studio today, Kim. Nicholas, as always, your expertise are highly valuable to us.
Thank you so much.
So what we learned today was that culture is extremely important. Culture and your brand actually speaks to one another. Codify your culture, as this will help you to systematically get everyone on board and everyone aligned to follow that one North Star. So if you want to know more about the Scaling Up methodology and how to get the right people on board that fit your values, please reach out to us. We'd love to chat.